Welcome to Talks Around a Farm Table, a podcast about the diverse landscape of agriculture on Kodiak Island. This series is driven by Kodiak Soil Water Conservation District in collaboration with KMXT Radio. I am your host, Ian Zacher. Today, for our Talks Around a Farm Table, we are going to be talking with Bernie DePlazies about flower growing here in Kodiak. She's been doing it for, decades, right? You've been doing it for a couple of decades. We've got lots of things to ask Bernie about growing them. But first, I want to say that her dahlias are second to none on the island. And if you ever get a chance to go by her hoop house, do it every summer. You'll feel much better about that. How you doing today, Bernie?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing grand. Thank you for showing up. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome for what it's worth.
Well, I think it's going to be worth a lot to a lot of people. So you have been on Kodiak for how long?
Well, since 1990. How long is that?
It's a while, yeah.
30
years or so.
Three years?
Yeah. And have you been growing dahlias that whole time?
No.
No?
Probably for about 15, 18 years, maybe.
Okay. Because you did grow up on Kodiak, but you've been here since the 90s. Do you have a background in flower growing as someone that's grew up somewhere in the Midwest there?
I'm not sure I understand that question, but I come from a farm family.
There you go.
A long line of farmers.
There you go.
And being that there are many avid gardeners and women in my family, they all grew flowers.
So you just grew up with growing things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Big gardens. I hail from the great state of North Dakota, which, as anyone who's ever heard of it knows, is farm country.
That is definite farm country, yeah.
Very rural. I think even now the largest city in North Dakota has less than 100,000 people. So,
what kind of things did you guys farm when you were growing up?
My dad was a small grain farmer.
Okay.
He also was one of the first people in North Dakota to grow sunflowers as a crop.
Wow. That is those, like, just... Like how many acres did he do that to?
I think the farm was probably about 500 acres, which was a medium-sized farm at that time. I mean, people now are farming 40,000 acres in North Dakota, but that was unheard of in the 70s and probably into the 80s.
I'm a first-generation farmer. I didn't grow up in a farming community. So you moved to Kodiak, and what made you decide to start growing flowers?
Well, I always had some flowers in the vegetable garden. You're a farmer now, even if you are just like a new farmer. Like, you grow a few flowers at your little place, don't you? Like, if it's in a pot or a...
Against my will, yes. Yeah.
One of those.
Yeah.
If I can't eat it, it's not worth growing.
Yeah, if I can't eat it, I don't grow it. Yeah. I have a lovely wife that she does all the...
I was just going to say, that's just because you're a boy.
Yeah. But you, like, what I think of growing, I think of growing vegetables. But there is this huge, or has been this huge movement of kind of shying away from that, especially in Alaska, where it seems like more and more... farmable land isn't being actually farmed for food. It's being farmed for peonies and flower growth. And I was just curious if you had any, like, idea about what maybe is driving that.
Probably money. I mean, I took vegetables to the farmer's market for many years, like lettuce and carrots and, you know, all the stuff that grows here. For one thing, everybody has the same thing at the same time, and I think you've probably run into this yourself, is like, if there's lettuce, there's a glut of lettuce. If there's carrots, there's a glut of carrots. So you never get the supply and demand, whereas, like, there's more demand than you have supply, and flowers are a luxury item, and they go for more money.
So it's about, like, you can sell, let's just say, for example, you can sell one peony stem for maybe 3 times the cost of what I could sell one bok choy for.
Probably.
Is that the idea? Yeah. It just seems like that there is this, like, this switch over to big time, what they're calling floriculture, is like this huge production of flowers. And I think that's like Alaska has the biggest peony
and that's output. Partly because in the lower 48, peonies only bloom early in the springtime, and Alaska, because of our later seasons and cooler weather, can supply flowers at times, or peonies in particular, which I don't really grow, but they can supply them at a time of the year to florists when other places can't. And that's why peonies became popular in Alaska. At least that's my understanding. I may not have that right, but...
You don't grow peonies, but you do grow...
Dahlias.
Dahlias. And you have, by my accounts, the prettiest hoop house in all of in Kodiak and all of Alaska that I've seen during the summertime. And we, especially Kieran, my firstborn, is always asking to go over there and check out your hoop house when the dahlias are in place. What made you choose dahlias as opposed to like other cutting
well
flowers?
I have grown a lot of other flowers. I bought a bag of dahlia tubers someplace for $5, and they were advertised on this bag that says huge 10-inch flowers, and I'm like, yeah. So I took them home and planted them, and voila, huge 10-inch flowers. So I was hooked. They're huge, they're beautiful, they're easy. I mean, as far as growing them is easy, you have to do a lot of work, and you have to dig them up if you want to save them, but they're tolerant of a wide range of conditions. There are downsides. They grow late in the year, and because they do and can't tolerate frost, you have a limited bloom season. But ease of operation is one thing. Pansies, dahlias, nasturtiums, plant them, they grow.
I find that absolutely fascinating because I can't grow a flower to save my life. It is a bit of work, though, to grow a whole hoop house full of dahlias, right? It's not something that you can just throw in the ground and they're going to grow, right?
Well, like, you can probably throw them in the ground and they're going to grow, but you have to do that. I'm growing like 400 of them. That's a lot of holes
that
you dig.
And they're not seeds, right? They're tubers,
right?
Correct? And how do you start that process? When do you start?
Well, I usually have been starting mine in February.
So you start them in February, and
they have to be in a heated and lit environment, like anything you expect to grow. So that you need some infrastructure.
Yeah.
And you can grow a dozen dahlias, you know, probably start them in your kitchen as long as there's some sunshine there. But to grow any amount of them, you have to have some place that's big enough and lit and warm.
So you got to have a little bit of infrastructure. Can you grow them outside in the open?
I have, but the bloom season is short.
It's shorter.
It tends to be if you don't plant them until it's warm enough, which is sometimes after it won't freeze. By the time they start blooming, will probably be August. And if you lived in Kodiak very long, you know that anytime after the 1st of September, you could have a hard frost.
Yeah.
They will grow. They're, well, at least in my yard, they didn't get as big. They did produce nice flowers. They will tolerate being rained on to quite a bit, not super hard for super long, but they're possible to grow them outside. I mean, I don't think you could do it commercially outside, but I'm only kind of semi-commercially anyway.
I think you're about as commercial as it gets for Kodiak.
Yeah. Probably.
Just for listeners out there, you do have a quite substantial hoop house that you grow them in.
It's 30 by 70.
Yeah,
so
that's a good size hoop house. And that's nothing to build, and that's not nothing to keep maintained.
No.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. So after you get them out of the grouch chamber, I'm going to call it a grouch chamber, but your lights and the heated area, when do you start putting them into the ground?
As soon as I think it won't freeze in the hoop house.
Okay, so that's...
And that can vary from
year to year. It does seem to be different every year, doesn't it? Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah, so about end of March maybe, beginning of April?
Probably later than that.
Okay.
They will not take a hard frost, and I do have the ability to put some heaters in there for a day or two and keep it warm if it's just going to be like a short cold snap, but again, that's work and fuel and equipment, and you have to kind of make sure that they're going to be warm enough that your heater will come on. Fortunately, I have a very handy husband.
It's always nice to have someone handy around the house that can whip up an idea that you've got that needs to be created.
Yes, it's very nice to be able to say, honey, I need this. And at first he'll say, what are you telling me for? And then when I go out there, it's set up and finished and works.
The task genie, always nice to have one. Adding that extra cost of like the fuel to heat it and stuff like that, that goes into how much you can, that's how much like it's going to break into the, like you, when you sell them, right? Like it takes so much to get them growing, but you also have to make a bit of money on the side to like keep the whole thing going.
My husband prefers if I at least break even.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's like not too lofty of a goal, really. I'm not really putting a lot of food on the table or paying for a lot of vacations with dahlias as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Kodiak is a hard market, I think, for anything that's locally produced. And I think that flower production is kind of a little tougher here on the island than it would be, let's say, if you had the same thing over on the mainland.
Well, for one thing, in Kodiak, is like in a lot of places, people who are just beginning farming, access to land is a real problem. There are not very many arable spots on Kodiak, and a lot of the spots that might otherwise be arable probably have a house on them. Or, I mean, we're fortunate we have an acre in the flats and enough room where I could have that hoop house, but many people are not going to have that access. And we bought our place at a time when houses weren't $500,000, which they are.
They are today, yeah.
You know, I don't actually understand how young people will ever buy a house sometimes.
With a little bit of luck.
I get paid better than I ever did, I guess.
And I think that kind of comes down to it. If you need, if you're going to be doing any sort of commercial scale, you need the space. And I was just talking with Kelly about, you know, trying to build farmers and what that looks like for the future. And it's really tough when land is so locked up here on the island, and in the state of Alaska in general.
And many other places, but it's like I like to throw this statistic out there just because it really kind of shocked me, is in the 4 years of World War II, 25% of all the produce grown in the United States was grown in people's front yards.
Yeah, yeah, those victory gardens. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's, I don't know that people are going to be doing it commercially, but to feed your own family and to you share some with neighbors, it's more a matter of will than anything. And my dahlia growing is a labor of love. It's like I'm not doing it for money, although, you know, that's always kind of a nice little bonus. I think you know yourself that you have to have a passion to do that kind of thing, to do it, because you're not going to get rich doing it.
Nope, not, at least not here. And so this kind of like brings me back to the I don't want to say juxtaposition, but kind of like the way in which you grow your dahlias and your cut flowers, and you do sell them at the farmers market in bouquets. You sell bouquets and you sell...
And From the farm gate sales.
Yeah, and then you do custom orders and stuff like that as well. And
pop-ups I started doing year before last. Just, I have a few friends that will let me set up on a busy spot, and that's actually gone very well.
Yeah, sitting at the little market there and popping it up there, and yeah. If you were to talk to someone who wants to become a flower producer, like, you know, commercially grown, how would you suggest to them to market them? I try to get them to get people to stop buying from out of state, out of country bouquets like they do. Like a lot of the flowers that come into Safeway and stuff are from out of state. Like they don't source it locally. And Walmart, they certainly don't. So how would you suggest someone to do that, to make that market?
Well, I think first you have to get your product out there. I will say dahlias, and probably if you could grow enough peonies to have a sellable quantity, they kind of sell themselves. I mean, my advertising has been almost word of mouth, and it's been, I guess, maybe 3 years since I've really had a lot of dahlias that I'm selling. A friend of mine from in the flat said, yeah, somebody was asking me about who that lady was that's growing the dahlias out in the flat. So word gets around, and I know, Ian, you've seen the flowers. It's like,
yeah,
you don't really have to talk somebody into buying them once they see them. I'm not taking any credit for how beautiful dahlias are. The breeders and the people that, you know, sell tubers and stuff, they're doing that work, but they have produced some pretty amazing cultivars. It's not safe to let me loose on the internet with the dahlia apps, because I can spend a lot of money there.
So it sounds like that's maybe they just have to have the quantity in order to supply demand. And you think that that would be, like, you don't think that like Safeway or Walmart would break into that market?
I think that Safeway and Walmart for a flower grower in Kodiak are going to always probably have the winter months where you're not going to have stuff. I've had people call me in February and ask me if I could make them up a bouquet, and I've had to say, in July, I can. But I'm not trying to take anything away from Safeway Flowers. I think they have some talented florists there, and their bouquets are beautiful. And I wish I dared charge as much money as they do for their flowers. But I think they're, for somebody who was like young and into marketing and had a passion for it, there might be a living there. I don't think it would be a big living, but I think you could, you know, pay your electric bill and put food on the table. And if not, you could take out a row of dahlias and like plant some tomatoes or something.
And so talking about that bit of market, what do you think would add, what would contribute to that market to make it like worth someone's time to try to make that living? Like, do you think that, they would have to generate a market? Like they would have to, like, you know, cater to restaurants or to the Coast Guard?
I think there's a lot of possibility out there. People buy flowers for everything.
Do you think there's like untapped potential out there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I, you know, sales, the selling part of it is the thing that I'm absolutely the worst at. But people who could like actually talk to people would, I think you could sell a lot of flowers in Kodiak. I'm trying to do it all by myself. It's like I'm doing the planting and the harvesting and the growing and the making of the bouquets and doing the deliveries. Somebody who could actually collaborate with somebody else, or maybe had somebody like kids or a spouse or something who could kick in. I think you could make it work.
Because you could ship them out of off island too,
that's
right?
That's one of the reasons why dahlias are really kind of a specialty local crop is because you can't ship them very well.
You can't ship dahlias. Oh.
I have seen websites where they offer to ship them, but dahlias, unlike peonies, for instance, that you can like harvest in the bud stage and you put them in a cooler, they'll stay in the bud stage for a long time. Take them out, they'll open. Dahlias, once they're removed from their plant,
they
don't
open
much. They might open a little bit, but they won't open much. You can't pick them in the bud stage and put them in a cooler. You have to pick them when they're ready to be presented. So that's a big downside, but also it's something that's in your favor because if you're local, you can supply something that somebody can't just ship in. And if they can ship them in, it's going to be really expensive because it's going to have to be refrigerated. And
Yeah, I guess I don't grow
tulips, for instance. You can also pick in bud stage and they will like stay in the bud stage, and as long as you keep them below about 40 degrees is like they'll go into stasis and bring them into the heat and the warmth and they'll and the light, and they'll open up and they'll be just as beautiful as if you picked them off a plant. But you can't do that with dahlias.
Is that why you like dahlias so much, is because they are just hyper local and that you are like the sole provider of all the dahlias?
I like them because they're big as your head.
They are big and beautiful. They are bodacious there, aren't they?
They're big as your head, and there's 20,000 named varieties of dahlias. They have so much genetic diversity that it's just crazy how many shapes and sizes and colors and variety that there is. So for me as a gardener, the exploration never stops. It's not safe to let me loose. It's like, I need that one and that one and that one. And pretty soon as my husband's slapping my fingers and taking my checkbook away.
How many varieties do you have?
I think this year I probably have about 70. Due to unforeseen circumstances, I lost a few varieties last year because I had to leave town at the wrong time and couldn't get them dug up. But on the other hand, I bought 40 more, so I'm not honestly sure, but somewhere in the 70 to 110 range. Hey, I got 19,900 to go.
So going back to you being a bit of a one-person show, that is a common occurrence with a lot of growers that I've talked to. Like they just do it all. Like those are one of the things that I want to highlight is that most growers don't have a secretary, right? They don't have a manager. They don't have this team of people. They are the growers, the sellers, the marketers, the tax, you know, having to do all the paperwork.
You are definitely the chief cook and bottle washer.
Yeah. And so how do you not like just burn out?
Again, and I think you can probably relate to this, is like you have to do it because you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it because I love it. The thing I like about selling flowers the most is when I hand over the bouquet and it's never not happened. The person's face who's buying the bouquet, their face just lights up because the flowers they sell themselves. They're absolutely beautiful.
It is that interaction that I can speak for myself as a grower and a seller. It's that interaction between the farmer and the seller. Like when we at the farmer's market, we can talk about like how we grow things and just like seeing like, I remember last summer we had those big giant purple cauliflowers, and I think we had one that was like 8 pounds. We sold it for an ungodly price, but people were so happy to just get to that big giant cauliflower. Like they walked around with it, like it was a prize from the fair or something. And I do agree with you that it is that interaction that is a huge driver of making, growing, and selling to people.
Well, like I said, I would do it anyway. I mean, I'd probably have 100 dahlias even if I was the only one that ever saw them. But being able to share it with people is nice. I mean, they walk into the hoop house and it's a little bit magical in there when everything's blooming.
It's a bit of a jungle. And so after you cut them and you make the bouquets, how do you, you said that as soon as the dahlias are cut, they don't, how long do they generally last?
It depends on the flowers. Like some of the bigger ones, don't have an extremely long vase life. It also depends on once you have a vase of flowers, where you keep them. I understand you interviewed Kelly last time.
Yeah.
She put hers in her milk cooler to decorate the milk cooler, and they would last for 3 weeks in there and still look pretty good. If you put them in a warm room with sun shining on them, 5 days is probably all you're going to get out of them.
So when you make the when you cut your flowers and you make your arrangements, you have at least a 3 week shelf life if you put them in a cool room.
In the cooler. I wouldn't sell them that long.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't sell them after more than 2 or 3 days because I want the customer to have the longest shelf life. And they say that the shelf life or the vase life doesn't really start till you take them out of the cooler, but I personally don't believe that.
Huh.
I think that it certainly slows any degradation down, but it doesn't stop it.
What do you keep the cooler at?
About 40 degrees.
Oh, so it's relatively warm even for cooler standards. Yeah, it's just a little bit cooler than...
It's about like a refrigerator.
Yeah. I have to keep my veg at 36, like the salads and the greens and everything. We keep them at 36. I find that...
Maybe I should try that.
When I cut the... especially like lettuce and stuff like that, like I cut it... if I keep it any warmer than that, then it's not as crispy.
Right.
It stays a little bit crispier.
Well, the dahlias are kind of fussy in as far as temperature goes. Like, they don't like it real cold either.
Hmm.
You know, they have their little niche that they want to live at. And I do some things with the flowers. I put flower food on them and do things to help them last longer in the vase because I want people to be really happy with their flowers.
Well, we are always happy. We're always so stoked when you start doing your floor arrangements. That actually is a great segue into, so you've got, the tuber, you put them in the ground. There has to be some sort of bed prep, right? Part of this conversation, I'd like people to take at least something away that they can, they can, some information, some knowledge that they can use to grow their own dahlias or grow their own flowers. But there is a bit of bed prep, right, to put them in. So how do you are they're not heavy feeders, like they're not particularly heavy feeders, so
no,
they're not, you're not using,
no, surprisingly they're not.
So you don't have to use a whole lot of compost or a whole lot of fertilizer?
I haven't. I fertilize my garden with chicken manure and grass clippings, basically. And every few years I send in a soil sample to see if the soil is missing something and try to add that back. But dahlia feeders or dahlias, surprisingly, for the giant flowers they make, don't require a lot of water. I've dug them in the fall and been kind of ashamed of myself how dry they were. And don't require a lot of nitrogen, for instance. It's like they say, don't feed your dahlias nitrogen. They'll make a lot of leaves,
but flowers.
Not very many flowers.
That actually might be beneficial for our wonderful Kodiak nitrogen-deficient soils.
I've seen pictures in, you know, older books about Kodiak that have pictures of big dahlias in people's front yards, and I haven't really seen too many of those growing in people's front yard. But that book was from the 60s, so people have grown dahlias in Kodiak for, well, at least since then.
For decades.
And many people grow them in a pot.
Huh.
And they're, well, dahlias also, and we were talking about how many cultivars there are, they go from little foot and a half tall to some of them in my hoop house have gotten to be 7 feet tall. So if you're wanting to try growing a few dahlias, I mean, you can grow little ones, medium ones, big ones.
I think my wife has got a couple grown in the backyard there.
Good.
Yeah. Along with some peonies as well. We've got, I think, a couple peonies that we grow, and those just keep coming back year after year.
Right. Yeah. They're long lived. They'll live 60 years.
So, I guess, so you grow specifically, is it just all dahlias that you grow, or do you grow anything else?
I have, other flowers I'm growing. I'm still experimenting with the flowers that you like to have some filler flowers. I mean, sometimes trying to put 14 giant dahlias in a vase, you need a little break for your eye. So I grow some Nicotiana and some columbine and to add to the bouquet.
You are planning to expand a wee bit, and you are in the process of getting another hoop house. Is that going to be specifically for flower production, or is that going to be your little food production side?
It hasn't been decided yet. My husband's like going to arm wrestle me for it.
Oh, does he want to do?
He wants to grow
melons.
Morels.
Oh, he wants to do mushrooms. That would be lucrative.
It might be.
It's actually something that I'm actually super interested in this winter. This is kind of a tangent from production, but flower production. But there's no local mushroom producers, and so we were experimenting. We experimented in the spring of what it would take to do that, and I'd be really interested.
Yeah, we should do that together. Yeah. I got a little building that I can use.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like, I talked to people in Hawaii that were growing mushrooms. Is unbeknownst to me, button mushrooms are the only ones they grow in the dark.
Hmm. Didn't realize that. But you are going through Equip, which I'm hoping in later future series that I will be able to talk to NRCS, which is the organization you go through to get Equip High Tunnel.
Right.
And the initial idea was to increase flower production.
For me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Hasn't been decided yet.
You're asking if I have a plan.
That's kind of great insight that, you know, a lot of us, we grow things and people think that we have this master plan time and time. I always get asked if I use a spreadsheet for my crops and everything. It's just like, no, not at all. It's just off of the hook. You know, just off the fly.
I know you're way more organized than I am, so.
Well, it may look like that, but I don't know sometimes. I feel like everyone works in their, I always say that everyone's the expert in their garden. So whatever works for them in their garden works. So I just want to thank you again for really coming out and giving us that time and your expertise. I think that that there are people out there that want to do flower production and they just don't quite know where to start. If I get people, I always say you should talk to Bernie.
Aww.
So. With that being said, again, thank you, Bernie, for showing up.
You're very welcome.
Is there anything that anywhere that people can find you when you're selling your flowers?
522 Levy Street out in the flats.
Are you? Well, you're also selling them at the farmer's market, right?
I haven't yet this year, but probably.
Okay.
Maybe.
But if people contact me, I can send them your way?
Sure.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, with that being ado, thank you so much, Bernie, for coming out. And hopefully, we can get you back as the season progresses.
So. Okay.
Thanks again to Bernie for stopping by and joining me for today's episode. Her dahlias are second to none. Floriculture has been the fastest growing farm sector in the country and the state. In Kodiak, the market is small, given our small population, distance to a major city, coupled with the lack of infrastructure that makes traveling near impossible. But with an increase of Coast Guard service members and their families, and restaurants warming to have real flowers on their tables, there may be an untapped market for a small cut flower farm who wanted to make a go of it. Listen to all the episodes of Talks Around a Farm Table on KMXT.org and Spotify. This show is in collaboration between Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District and KMXT Radio. You can find me, Ian Zacher, on Facebook at Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District or on the web at www.kodiaksoilandwater.org. Music featured in this episode is Boil the Breakfast by The Chieftains, which is my son's favorite song.